Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand this week. So glad to have you guys around. We're going to take your financial questions. I've got Terry Savage in the studio with me, longtime friend. Hey, Terry, welcome.
Good to be with you, especially on a day when the Dow is up, 55 points? 17,896?
It's a good day to be here, for sure. It was not such a good day last week, and certainly after Brexit. We'll talk about that in a minute. If you'd like to call or text your money questions to us, we'll try and give you our best money moves for you. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can call or text. You can also reach out via Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, and TerrySavage.com for all of her information. So, all right. Stock market's a little bit up, and gold is way up.
Gold is way up. Now, so we've regained just about all the ground lost in the U.S. stock market, not so with markets around the world. Gold has risen now about $150 an ounce in the last couple of weeks, trading now at $1,366, up another $8 today, but a lot more over the long weekend in international trade. And so we have and interest rates. More than a third of the world's developed world's debt is now yielding negative interest rates in Japan and Germany and France. Money is rushing into Switzerland from euros. The British pound has fallen to 30-year lows. So while we are not feeling it, as we discussed here at the show a week ago, the money is coming here. The dollar is strong, so we're in okay shape. We'll get a hit in earnings as U.S. companies who sell overseas find they can't sell as much because you have to scrape together more pounds sterling or more euros to buy $1 worth of stuff. That hasn't hit our market yet. Money's come from all over the world seeking safety to gold, to our stock market, and out of the British pound and out of the euro. So that's what's going on.
So I just wanted to, you know, wind back just a little bit to this idea that we have so much money that is in negative interest rates. So that means that if you put $100 into a bank, instead of getting back $103 or $100...
you have to pay them. It means literally in Europe, in Japan, and certainly around the places that are most troubled, there is such a great concern that your buying power will drop even further, as that the economy will have such a terrible slowdown that you'll be out of work, that you're looking for a place to keep money safe. And if you put money in a bank in most of Europe, if you put money in a bank in France, you are literally paying them.
Right. So you put in $100 and you might get $99 back.
Exactly. So, but they feel better knowing they would at least get 99 euros back or 99 pounds sterling back than they would get less than that anywhere else they put it. And that the value of their currency is depreciating. So,
well, which is completely crazy. All right, let's go take a call. 312-981-7200. Hey, John, what's your question or your comment?
Yes.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. My question is in regards to the whole Brexit situation. Does it seem that in November, December, because of the economy that's probably going to be going down over in Europe, is that going to trickle over into our country and lower interest rates even further for us for home mortgages and whatnot?
Okay, very interesting question. So there's two reasons interest rates go down. One is everybody's rushing to buy whatever this interest rate thing is, a bond, a treasury bill, and the more buyers push prices up, yields work inversely, yields go down. The other reason that could make interest rates go down is simply a lack of demand for money from businesses, for example, borrowing to expand. Businesses won't be borrowing to expand so much when the economy slows because they can't sell stuff globally. So there's a great possibility that even U.S. interest rates could go lower. For sure, the Fed's no longer in the business now of we're going to raise interest rates next month. Next
oh, yeah,
month.
There's no raising interest rates
okay.
at all.
And it's entirely possible that by November, we could have a global growth slowdown, and we could have a lack of demand for money in the sense of borrowing demand here. And, you know, that's a huge, that multi-trillion dollar interest rate market that far smarter people than I trade in every day on the floor of the Mercantile Exchange and, you know, in the Treasury markets. And it's entirely possible that despite the Fed's desire to have rates be higher and have a stronger economy, rates might be even lower.
But here's the thing, Terry, that I think is not discussed enough, which is not only do you have less demand, but there is less approval of the demand that there is, right? You've got banks who are really not out there looking to lend money the way that we've been hoping that they would by lowering interest rates.
Three aspects to it. The banks, no matter what, you know, I'm not hitting a pity day for the banks.
Oh, who should?
But the banks are so encumbered now by rules and regulations and capital requirements that they've become far less likely to make loans. There's less demand for loans because companies are looking around at the economy and going, I don't think we need to build that new plant, certainly not in the United States, but I don't think we need to add that new division or hire more people. So that's kind of a self-reinforcing cycle. And what you alluded to is, yeah, if you don't have great credit, it's wonderful to see mortgage rates at 30-year lows, but in fact, you have to have some money down, and you have to have pretty good credit to get those low interest rates.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. John, thank you so much for your call. Did we get that answered for you?
Yes, you did. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much. 312-981-7200 with the great Terry Savage, terrysavage.com. So let's talk about gold for a little bit longer, because what I thought is so interesting, I remember the days when gold was like $800 an ounce, and it fell all the way back to $200 an ounce. Then it went all the way up. This is a market.
It just shows at least what a baby you are. I remember the days when gold was $35 an ounce.
There you go.
And then when President Nixon closed the gold window and it traded internationally up to an unheard of $65 an ounce. And on January 1st, 1974, Americans first got the right to own gold again in bullion form. They could own collector's coins before that. So we're talking back in the 70s. Now, just in the last 10 years, we had gold peak at $1,900 an ounce in the summer of 2011, in July of 2011.
Right.
Before that, in the financial crisis, lest you think that gold only goes up in a crisis, gold had dropped down to below $600 an ounce in 2007. And more recently, you see gold is up over $200 an ounce since year-end last year. So we know some things about gold. People love it. It stood the test of time and centuries. I think of Rumpelstiltskin spinning straw into gold. Alchemists trying to make gold out of base metals. Gold is something very special. It's a refuge in times of crisis. And what we're seeing now is fear of the breakup of the European Union, all part of the currencies over there, and you're seeing a move into gold. But gold can be very volatile. So if you want to have I always have a percent of my portfolio in gold, gold stock mutual funds, gold coins, bullion coins that you keep safe in a safe deposit vault. But just remember, gold has not ever been a one-way street. Only for a while, and it's so exciting to be in when that happens.
Yeah, it's like a roller coaster. It feels great. It's up and up and up and up, and then you remember that it drops really fast.
It can go both ways, but the nicest thing is that typically, and except in 2007, 2008, when the market fell and gold prices fell as people tried to sell anything to get liquid back then, but typically it goes the other way. So last week when the market was collapsing for a few days for Brexit, and I sent out the warning to my subscribers, hey, don't panic, the nicest thing was that gold was going up at the same time, balancing things out.
Thanks, Terry. 312-981-7200. Jim, we're going to get your call in just a minute. But 1221 on WGN Radio. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand on today's Wintrust Business Lunch. I'll be here the rest of the week. I've got Terry Savage of terrysavage.com in the studio with me. So, Terry, Dow is up about 55. We are,
896. We've come back. It's not our problem yet.
Not our problem yet. All right. 312-981-7200. Jim joins us on the line. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind today?
I was just concerned. I asked your host there. The international funds, we've always been told, keep 10% in there. And on your average whole portfolio, and boy, I've only seen like in the last 5 years 1.3%, in the last 10 years 2.5%. Comparing it to the S&P and stuff, it looks like a bad investment. And I'm wondering if that's something where we should still stay in, even with the thing in London too going on.
You know, that is really a tough question. I want to say that I really believe in diversification. I've never been comfortable in believing that international or global is better than the U.S. It leavens, it gives a little spice to your portfolio. And I will tell you that I sold out of my international mutual funds that were part of my portfolio at least 9 months ago. I think maybe it was last summer because I didn't like what was going on in Europe. Now, the question is, because I'm not a market timer, I have no, at my stage, I'm not going back into international funds now. But those stocks have been so oversold now because everybody knows. What does everybody know? Europe's falling apart. Great Britain's going to slow down. The pound is falling. The euro is falling. I'm not sure if all the bad news is in the market, but we ought to be pretty close to the market. So if you're younger and you don't want to lock in a loss here and you can ride it out, you might want to stick around.
All right. Well, riding it out is interesting, too, right? Because you've got and think about this, Jim. You know, when you talk about riding it out, these days, riding it out, look how fast we came back from Brexit.
But
like,
that's
what is
different.
That? Well, but it doesn't seem different, right? Because everybody just looks at the numbers of the stock market and where it is.
But what happened with Brexit was a global panic over the totally unexpected. The morning, mm-hmm. that Friday morning a week and a half ago, before the market even opened, I sent out a note, Brexit panic, don't join in. It's a free subscription. I write newsletters when I get really in the mood, so don't look for it all the time. And that was one of those early mornings, boy, I know people are going to panic. That was a kind of an emotional panic. The actual facts on the ground in Europe, especially, and South America especially, are so economically horrible right now that it's almost contrarian to say, well, maybe I wouldn't buy. That's not my stage. I'm not a speculator. But maybe if it's a part of your portfolio, this isn't the right time to sell. But you might have lower to go and longer to wait, is my opinion, if you're in these international funds. But if you've got 20, 30 years to go, you know, the world's going to change a lot, and those stocks might be bargains if Europe gets its act together.
Well, Latin America...
Closer to the bottom than the top.
Well, Latin America is a really scary place right now, too.
Oh.
Venezuela, there were stories on the news about people not having middle class...
falling apart. But the Brazilian stock market is up dramatically.
And why?
Nonetheless,
it's a mess.
Because they kicked out their... which is the prime minister, the head of state, Dilma Rousseff, and because there's hope, they started down the road to things getting better. Look, it's always easy to buy stocks when everything is going well. You think, well, good, yeah, I'm glad I own stocks. America's fine. This is fine. And it's always hard to hold stocks when it looks like the world is falling apart. Now, I'm basically a long-term investor. I decided that that's my stage in life. My long-term didn't include Europe. But if you're still investing, putting money in your 401k plan and so forth, diversifying, maybe it should, because you know what? No place on the planet is going to be good if Europe and South America are really going to be in the tank forever.
Well, the one thing we can safely say, Jim, is that you would definitely not want to put cash into a European bank at the moment. That we know is a losing proposition. Thank you for your call.
Negative rates.
Right, negative rates, right? Ann joins us on the, was on the call, on the phone. Let's try Jim. Jim, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Jim. What's your question for Terry?
I have a variable annuity with Northwestern Mutual Life Insurance Company, and I'm thinking about putting part of that in a qualified longevity annuity contract.
Uh-huh. Yes. Okay, a QLAC is an annuity. First of all, I'm glad you're with Northwestern Mutual. It's a good company, and you didn't get ripped off. So I heaved a sigh of relief. And now I'll move on to the subject of QLACs. What an interesting, great idea, and I wrote a column about them. You can click on my archives on the Huffington Post. This is money that will start paying out later on when you might be running out of money if you live long enough. So maybe it'll start paying out at age 75 or age 80. And because you transfer this money into the annuity that doesn't have to pay you immediately and might not have to pay you if you die at 74 and the payout was supposed to start at 75, although you can get insurance to give some to your heirs. But because they have use of your money longer, you get a much bigger check down the road. So it's a QLAC, a qualified longevity annuity contract. A great idea for a piece of your money if, in fact, you think you're going to live longer. The other thing is it doesn't impact your minimum required distributions from your IRA up to a certain point you can put aside. So definitely look into it.
K Jim, thanks so much for your call. Terry, that went so quickly, and we're out of time, and there are lots of other people who have questions.
This.
Where should they send their emails?
Oh, well, you can post your questions at terrysavage.com. There's a button that says Ask Terry, and I spend late nights on weekends sitting up there answering your questions. Pardon me, I'm a little behind after the holiday weekend, but I'll get right at it.
You're going to get right at it. I know that for sure. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with, you know, another half hour of fabulous, exciting stuff here on WGN Radio. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the new Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand this week. It is so beautiful out. It is great. And there are a whole lot of people out there on Michigan Avenue. If you're looking for me on Twitter, it's at Glink. Be sure to follow me. I have to, you know, we've got our social media and digital stuff segment coming up, so I've got to, like, get all of the digital stuff out there. Thinklink.com. You can sign up for my free weekly newsletter, but won't give you the same stuff Terry's does, I promise. And, of course, Facebook and Instagram, where we added one new Instagram follower yesterday. Thank you very much. All right, 12:36 on WGN Radio. We've got Frank Sennett joining us on the line. Hey, Frank, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you so much.
So it's nice to have you here. A lot of stuff going on today, right? And Chicago tech jobs, and we're going to talk bucket feet. Where do you want to start?
Well, we can talk about the tech jobs. We've got a report out now from CBRE that has some interesting insights about how Chicago fares against cities ranging from San Francisco to New York and L.A.
All right, so how do we compare? Because it strikes me that we are growing tech as an industry in this city. Just, it's incredible, and we're not quite where Palo Alto is, perhaps, where I think there aren't any other jobs other than tech jobs or venture capital jobs. But it seems like there's a lot going on here now.
Yeah, so according to the CBRE analysis, we are the 13th best market in the country for tech talent. And, you know, part of that is because we're the Big Ten feeder city. So everybody gets these great degrees in the Big Ten schools. They come into Chicago. And for the tech companies, it's a great deal because it's about 30% less to hire somebody in the tech industry in Chicago than it is, say, in San Francisco. So you get about a third off on your labor talent. And you've got a growing labor pool. Between 2010 and 2015, Chicago's tech labor pool grew 35%, which is outstripping New York and Los Angeles. It's behind San Francisco and Austin and Seattle, some of the real tech hubs. But it's pretty formidable.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Earlier this week, we were talking, I'm trying to think of who it was we were going through this number, but the idea that diversity-wise, Chicago is eighth most diverse tech in terms of tech jobs in the country. But it's interesting that we're 13th behind. There's some room to grow here, right?
Absolutely. Right now, we've only got about 136,000 tech jobs or the labor pool in Chicago, compared to San Francisco has 316,000. So we've got a long ways to go, a long ways to grow. But again, the conditions are right as we have these incubators like 1871, more tech startups coming and staying. You've got this influx of Big Ten talent. You've got cheaper labor costs, and you know, for the people coming to work in tech, the percentage of their wages spent on rent, that's very low in Chicago, about 21% compared to, you know, a huge 27% in San Francisco, 33% in New York. Rents are a lot cheaper here, 66% less than New York, 46% less than San Francisco. So we are, if we will build it, they will come. I think tech talent is seeing Chicago as a very cool city that's, you know, bikeable, walkable. So it just really comes down to that, incubating these tech startups and making sure that they stick around for a while.
You know, it's pretty important that you mention that. I was in Dallas last week, and downtown Dallas is kind of like a ghost town in a way. They're really trying to do what we've done here, but it's hamstrung by a lack of public transportation. They don't really have enough infrastructure or rentals. They're trying to now convert these old big buildings into rentals, and I felt like as I was walking around, not only was it 100 degrees, but I felt like
right.
We were just, ages ahead of them, decades ahead of them in terms of where our public infrastructure is, how we can port people around, and then these kind of satellite hubs of work that have grown up with the tech
industry.
You've
got the West Loop area is just burgeoning with tech companies, Google, and so a lot of smaller firms are setting up shop there, and you got the great restaurants all around there. What a wonderful place to work and play. And then you've got all these high-end apartments going up in the central city, attractive to young tech workers. They've got a lot of amenities, very close to everything. You've got the Riverwalk. I mean, we are doing a lot of things right to attract this kind of talent, I think.
Which is great. So I know another thing you wanted to talk about was the report in Crain's Chicago Business on Bucket Feet abandoning its strategy. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so Bucket Feet, is putting on some comfortable shoes and doing a bit of a pivot on how they distribute their great footwear. They used to sell in Nordstrom and in Bloomingdale's as well as direct to consumers, and they've decided to just do the direct to consumer route going forward. They say the 12 to 18 month cycle of creating the collection, showing them to buyers, getting them stores is just too slow for them. They want to be more nimble on their Bucket Feet and take a new design concept to a finished product in 30 to 40 days and offer it direct for sale to consumers. So that's they're banking on that as their next growth strategy.
Oh, it sounds good. Listen, you got to pivot, right? This is a world where the pivot has become now something a little bit more than a dance step.
That's right. And, if you're in Chicago, you can actually still buy them in stores. They've got retail outlets in Block 37 and another one in Bucktown. And then they're also opening in Washington, D.C. and looking at space in Miami. So they'll still have some brick-and-mortar presence, but, it's more of an online play.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Well, let's turn to food. Did you know that today is, National Fried Chicken Day?
I did not know that.
Well,
every day is National Fried Chicken Day to me.
Well, Shake Shack does sell a fried chicken sandwich, but I don't think of fried chicken when I think of them. You?
No, I get the double cheese and maybe a shake. That's why I don't go there very often. But when you do, you have to really load up.
So I've noticed that Shake Shack is just popping up all over, faster than McDonald's. They're doing well. Now you're telling me they're coming to Fulton Market?
Yeah, so Shake Shack is going to open its fourth area location in the Fulton Market District, which is interesting because that's been such a place for one-off homegrown restaurants, and now a chain, a high-end chain nonetheless, but a chain that's now making inroads there, opening up. So, you've got your next restaurant, your Girl and the Goat, and then you've got Shake Shack.
So how fast do you think they're going to keep expanding? It just seems that it's going I remember when the first one opened up in Danny Meyer, it was in the park, not here in Chicago, it was in New York, and the lines were insane at all times of the day or night. So how's the strategy going?
The Flatiron building there, yeah.
Right. How's the growth strategy going now?
Well, they really are under a lot of pressure to grow fast and get to the, they have a huge valuation, so they're trying to grow revenues. And right now they have 95 stores, including 57 in the United States. And they started in 2001, so in 15 years they've gone, to almost 100 stores. And they want to open at least 16 a year going forward.
16 a year seems like a reasonable amount of growth. If you're at about 100 stores, 16 stores, could add significantly. Do you know more about their plans in the Chicago area? Do you think they'll add more stores here?
They are looking at other locations in Chicago. So I would guess that they haven't topped out here yet if they find the right play, and probably in some of the suburbs as well.
Mm. Is there anybody else in the retail business that you can think of, in the retail food industry, I should say, that is growing at that kind of a rate? I think we last saw it with Chipotle, and then they've really slowed down. They've had some huge issues with food quality and other kinds of issues as they've expanded. But can you think of anybody else that's kind of growing at that rate?
I think, in terms of sectors in that fast casual area, there's been a lot of brick oven pizza type restaurants that have been growing fairly quickly. And then you've also had, the whole protein bar explosion and their rebranding and everything. But they, again, kind of a high-end, high-quality fast food experience. They seem to have been expanding pretty rapidly. But, Shake Shack seems fairly unique in the aggressiveness of their expansion plan.
It was funny. My son had never eaten there, and he said, let's go get something to eat. We were at Old Orchard. We had, it was like 2:30, I don't know, the afternoons a couple of weeks ago. And I said, well, let's go here. Have you ever been here? He goes, he was thinking, oh, mom's going to take me to a really nice restaurant. And I'm like, no, let's go here. Let's have a great burger. And so he orders the burger, and he gets like the double with cheese and the bacon or whatever it was on it. It was like 10,000 calories. And so he takes a bite, and he goes, this is pretty good. And then he takes another bite, another bite. He's having the fries. He's like, you know, this is a really good burger. And I said, that's why it's growing. That's why
And they also, you know, pick places where it's kind of a lifestyle play, like in the Fulton Market area, in that Chicago Athletic Association Hotel, that, you know, like hit places where, you know, to see and be seen is as important as getting a good meal sometimes. So I think they've been very savvy about positioning themselves as a very cool brand.
Well, Frank, thanks so much for checking in with us this week, and we'll see you again next week, huh?
Thank you so much.
All right, Frank Sennett with Crane Chicago Business, sponsored by Allstate. It is 12:45. I'm Elise Glink on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay tuned to WGN Radio. On WGN Radio. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand. You can follow me at Glink or at thinklink.com or on Instagram, your pick. Ellen Prinzi joins me on the line right now. Ellen is the founder of Oleo City. Hey, Ellen, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Elise. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. I'm excited about your new app. Tell us a little bit about it. What is Oleo City?
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. Oleo City is a personalized city discovery application. And what that means is we learn the things you like, the kind of events and restaurants, and then we make recommendations based on that. So your recommendations travel with you from Logan Square to Andersonville or from city to city. It takes the searching out of getting to know cities.
All right. So if I'm a big fried chicken fan, which I am, and by the way, today is National Fried Chicken Day. I'm just saying.
That's right. It is.
No, and I haven't had any. So every time I go to Atlanta, I love fried chicken. Would your app tell me in the cities that I travel to where you have it, that where the best place to eat fried chicken is?
So our algorithm is all based on where you are and what's recommended to you based on what's around you. So when you land, based on the things you like or dislike in Chicago, where you are, you're going to get recommendations about what's near you. Now, you can also search for fried chicken, and you would get the best local fried chicken options. So another great thing about Oleo is that we do not have any national chains or fast food restaurants. It's all local business. So if you're like me, when you travel, that's the kind of things you seek out, not to eat at another chain restaurant that you can get back home.
It sounds like that's how you came up with this idea. Is that true?
That is true. So I spent a lot of time in hotel rooms visiting Chicago with my husband and spending upwards of 30 minutes trying to find a decent place to eat. And typing in Italian food and getting, you know, Buco di Beppo or something was not what I was looking for. So I wanted the fastest way to get what was of interest to me that was local.
Okay. And so Yelp, how is this different from, say, Yelp or some of the other programs out there that kind of rate this stuff?
So Yelp is a crowdsourced platform. And what that means is people put their opinions and then you get a star aggregate and that's how things are deemed good or not. So Oleo is combining old school writing publications where you have a food reviewer come in and write a review. We're kind of marrying the data of the review sites with an editorialized, curated voice of this is what the place is like. So we call out the vibe, what the restaurant's known for or the event, and why we think you should go there.
That's pretty cool. So tell me how many restaurants, well, first of all, what cities do you have it in?
So we launched in St. Louis and Chicago, St. Louis in the spring, and we just launched Chicago last week. And so we're just in those two markets now, but we're expanding to three more in the fall.
Oh, that's exciting. So how do we get the app?
Currently, we're just in the App Store for iOS and iPhones, but we are coming out with an Android version in the fall.
Oh, that's kind of good, since I have a Samsung.
Oh, no.
It's all right. I, you know, we have a lot of people around us with iPhones, so I'll just borrow one of theirs. All right, so I know you have some people that you've picked in Chicago to help you get this off the ground. Who are some of your celebrity Chicago influencers?
So So that's one of our sections in the app. We have a famous local guide, and we interview people that are notable in the city, whether that's a famous
chef. Wait a second. I didn't get a call. What do you mean?
Do you want to be our next one?
I'm just kidding. So you go to people who really know, like the chefs, and who else?
Well, they have an interesting take on the city. You know, the girls who started Bonnie and Tracy, they started Shred 415. Mm-hmm. You know, we asked them 10 things about their Chicago. And so that was kind of a healthy slant on that. If they're going to splurge, where do they go? Where do they go for, a quick lunch? We have some politicians coming up. We asked them questions about their favorite place for a power lunch. Some of the athletes we have that are going to be in the rotation, favorite place to grab a beer after the game. That's those sort of questions. So you're trying to get their Chicago through their eyes based on, their backgrounds.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And it sounds like you've got quite the marketing background as well. Tell us a little bit about that, because I understand from my producer, Mike, that you've done sports operations and marketing for several baseball teams. Is that right?
I'm just faking marketing, because my background is actually in operations. I was with the St. Louis Cardinals, the New York Mets, and the San Francisco Giants in front office baseball operations, which is scouting, player development, kind of behind the scenes that helps put the team on the field. That was my old career.
Oh, that's fun. So now you're doing this full time.
Correct. We've been around for about 2 years, building this product for almost 2 years.
Oh, that's so exciting. Well, best of luck to you with it. Oleo City, is there a website as well to go to?
Sure. It's oleocity.com, and you can go there and learn a little more about the app and keep tabs on that for our Android app and new cities coming this fall.
Oh, that's terrific. Ellen, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Elise. I appreciate it.
I appreciate that. Ellen Prinze is the founder of Oleo City app, which you can download from the app stores or go to oleocity.com. When it comes to retirement planning, I've procrastinated once or twice, because maybe if I just put it off for a little longer, it'll plan itself, right? Unfortunately, you and I both know that's just not how it works. And that's where the professionals at the Mutual Fund Store come in. They're passionate about helping everyday Americans work to achieve their long-term financial goals. They're a fiduciary, which means they'll always put their clients' best interests first. They believe everyone deserves an advocate. Someone who stands with them every step of the way, not just someone who has $1 million to invest. They're actual people you meet one-on-one, and what they'll do for you is help you get a long-term plan in place based on your goals. And they're in frequent communication with you, making sure the plan you worked on together is helping you achieve your goals. If you have any questions or would like a free portfolio review, call the Mutual Fund Store Advisors at 847-498-3636. That's 847-498-3636, or visit their website at mutualfundstore.com.